Hello and welcome. I'm excited because my guest today is Billy Oppenheimer. Billy is a writer and he is also the research assistant for Ryan Holiday. That's right, the great Ryan Holiday. And it is my prediction that I believe Billy will be a New York Times best-selling author and someone who sells millions and millions of copies of his book in his own right because of his taste, because of his work ethic, and because he is already so well connected and he's just a guy in his 20s. In this conversation, we spoke about what it's like to work for Ryan, the coffee cup theory of AI, how he got connected to Rick Rubin, what it was like to ride in a car with Robert Greene, how he goes about his writing process, and much, much more. There's so much in this episode for you to take away. I just watched it and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to listen or watch it again. So I hope you have that very same feeling when you listen to it. And if you enjoy it, let me know on Twitter. Share this episode with somebody you think will enjoy it. Not just me, but spread it to a writer, somebody who's creative, or somebody who also enjoys the process of how ideas come to be creatively. So share this episode on Twitter, on Instagram, YouTube, text message, group chat, wherever you share your stuff. Share this episode if you got value from it and you think the person or people you're sharing it with will get value from it as well. And I think you'll find that because this was unbelievable. So without further ado, here is Billy Oppenheimer. Billy, thank you for coming on the podcast. Really grateful and honored for you to be coming on here because I admire you so much as a writer and I'm so grateful for getting to know you as a friend. So
yeah, I'm excited to be here. I'm a fan of the podcast, long time listener, first time caller, as they say on sports radio. But yeah, I've been looking forward to this. Cool that we get to do it in person here in Austin.
Nothing better.
Yeah.
Let's start with your Uncle Bill. Who is Uncle Bill?
Yeah, Uncle Bill, he was like the first person to read my writing and like give me confidence in that I should take it serious. So I started a blog in 2017 or so. I was basically just writing like into the void, like no readers really that I knew of. I'd been traveling and it was kind of just like, I want to capture some of this experience. And like, I had this urge to, write what I was experiencing and stuff I was reading. And, Uncle Bill read that blog and I saw him between, I was home from New Zealand and I was getting ready to go out to Colorado I was chasing winter. I was going back and forth. And at Thanksgiving in 2017, I think we were talking about the blog and the writing, and he recommended Perennial Seller by Ryan Holiday. And he was just like, I think you should start taking this writing thing seriously. And if you want to, like, this would be a great book. I just read it. Uncle Bill also, he himself is a great writer. So he was reading it for like his own, starting to get his writing out there, and he was working on a book, and that book was really influential on his process. So I read that book on the flight to Colorado and was just like, wow, this is, and the timing was right, because if I hadn't started the blog, it was the first time I had read a book, and I think it was because I was starting to write, where I was like, for the first time ever, I was like, who did this, you know? Like, that somebody is doing a version of what I'm doing for the blog. Like, they did a similar thing here. And I want to like know who that is. It was the first time I like looked into like the author behind a book. So I searched Ryan on Google, and I couldn't believe it. Like, he looked about my age and he had written, I think, 6 or 7 books by that point. I was like, wow. So I ordered 3 or 4 of his other books and just went down the rabbit hole of his work.
Dude. Okay, there's so many threads we could pull on from that opening answer. I'm so grateful for it. So one thing that sticks out is just like, he had the belief or the confidence, Uncle Bill did, in you and was able to water that in some respect. What about
your relationship has been different than every other relationship.
Also, so like I said, Uncle Bill was a writer, and just like I knew him to be a great reader, and for him to say that he liked my writing was like, wow. So I don't know if the recommendation would have landed the way it did coming from Uncle Bill. So it was like the right time, from the right person.
So wild how just like one recommendation, one story can change everything. And then you stumble across Ryan at this time, and you're like, what happened here? How did this guy do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, what's the next step?
So after I read Perennial Seller, I read The Obstacle is the Way, Ego is the Enemy, Trust Me, I'm Lying, The Daily Stoic, and like everything just like went way back into his blog archives and just was like reading everything. And through that, I learned about his trajectory of working for Robert Greene, the sort of like apprentice model of going and working for a great writer and learning under that person. And that was, so I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That would be the way, if I want to pursue this, I should go learn from like a great writer. So I kind of like took a page out of his playbook and just emailed him and was like, hey, all of your books send me, when I got to the end of Ryan's books, I would like pick a couple books from the bibliography and read those and find like the story he tells about Roosevelt, like where did he get that? And then I find it in the source. I'm like, and I'm starting to piece together like how the writing comes about. And another thing I did in this period was I learned about this, the practice of copywriting. Do you know what this is? Like, so it's exactly what it sounds like. You just longhand copy out the work of someone else. And the idea is just like, how are they doing it? And I did that with Obstacles Away because the chapters are kind of short. So I would do one chapter a day.
You'd be writing out by hand.
The whole chapter.
The whole chapter.
And I did the whole book. And then this was in that like the time period from first reading Perennial Seller before like ultimately emailing him and saying like what an influence he's been on me, and just like I would love to have like my reading be focused because I'm doing all this like reading stemming from his books. Would there be a way for like that to help him in some way? So I sent that email in like June of 2018. And he like got back to me. He was like, yeah, actually it could use some help. I'll be in touch. And that was like our first interaction.
Again, I have so many questions. One, why did you write it by hand? Like what, I mean, you've come across so many pieces of writing and so many things in your life, so many movies, plays, books, pieces of media, content in general, but like this you chose to write by hand.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I was at that point, I was really wanting to get better as a writer, and I was thinking about what I did as like an athlete prior to finding like this interest in writing. One of the things I would do is like find my favorite players, watch their film, and then go out in the backyard and like practice those moves. And I was like, maybe I'm gonna do a version of that here. So and then I coincidentally, like around that time, just heard that concept of copywriting. It wouldn't have occurred to me to do that, but I heard about that. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do that. And Ryan just seemed like an obvious choice because I was like, at that time, really going down deep in his work, and also the chapter lengths were like perfect because it was like, I'm gonna make this part of my morning routine. So it was like all those reasons, that seemed like a good book to do it.
And then why did he respond, or why did your message hit him? Because I'm sure he gets a bunch of messages like that.
Yeah.
Every day. I'm sure you see them today. So yeah. Like what about your message in particular stood out?
Well, so his reply, so in my initial email, I also quoted a philosophy professor, and I was like, and this professor said something on the first day of class that always stuck with me, and I never like really knew exactly what he meant by it, but he said, the value in this material is not in the novelty, it's in the practicality. And I just like kind of like the phrasing of it, and it's for some reason it was like lodged in my head. And when I read one of Ryan's books, that phrase like came back to mind. I was like, oh, not in the novelty. Like, these are old ideas, but like you can apply them. So they're practical. And I like said that to him. I was like, I had this revelation. And Ryan replied, he's like, that's a great line by your professor. I actually could use some help. I'll be in touch. So then like, it was just odd things here and there. Like, I remember he emailed me, he's like, hey, could you transcribe this? And it was audio of a conversation between him and Robert Greene, just like a 2 hour long, a phone call. And I just transcribed it, sent it back to him. It was like odd things like that over a 6 month period. And I think the timing was right. I don't think if I emailed him today, it would have worked. But in 2018, he was just starting to bubble up. He was just starting to like grow a team around him. So it was just kind of like right time, right place.
Yeah. I mean, I remember emailing him in 2014 after reading Obstacles the Way and just like being like, this guy wrote a book that changed my life and now he's responding to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And it really stuck with me.
No, he is pretty good at responding to people. It might be like some, you know, just a quick note back, but he does try to still to this day reply to those things.
And then, okay, so you get your first job as like, all right, I'm going to transcribe this conversation. What were other jobs that you did in that time?
He would often send me like a photo from a book he was reading and just like, could you transcribe this passage? And then I'd later see it in like a Daily Stoic email. He was doing some articles for DailyStoic.com. I did like a long summary review, like lessons learned from Epictetus's discourses. He was working on an article about John Fonte and John Fonte's publisher was also publishing Hitler's Mein Kampf, and John Fonte's work almost like didn't get out because they're focused on Mein Kampf. So he was doing this like long form piece, and I just like was like tracking down details to like triangulate that story, just like random stuff like that. And it wasn't like I might not hear from him for 2 weeks, and then I was just like kind of got my foot in the door, and just like kind of would come to mind when things came up. And you do like one of those jobs, you like get it back on time. Then like when something else comes up, he's like, let me try that guy again. And it was just like that. It was just kind of a slow build.
Yeah. It's funny when people want to help out with this podcast, what do? They do clips. And then I like the clips that they send me. They do more. And then all of a sudden now I'm paying people to do clips, but it didn't start like that a couple months ago. And it's just like, that's an interesting thing, like starting small.
For sure.
And the importance of starting small, especially when working with somebody who you really respect and admire.
Yeah. And it was cool to see like those kind of like gritty little jobs are like, they're actually important to the work. And if I hadn't seen that, like, I don't know if I would have thought to like, I don't know. It was just cool to see the process of, oh, this little anecdote in this book, let me pull this out. I'm not sure if I'm going to use it right now, but I like the story. I might use it later. And now like, that's a big part of like what I still do today for my own stuff is just like those little things I learned through Ryan is like, they weren't like huge projects, but it's like, oh, that's like a neat little, part of the process that I'm going to start using myself.
One thing you mentioned when I was doing research for this is you said that by working with Ryan, I realized that it's writing is way more blue-collar work than it is white-collar work.
Yes.
What's that about?
In the sense that it's not, like, as magical as I once thought when I, like, was just a young reader and loved books. Like, you never stop to think, like, how did this book wind up on the shelf? To me, at least, it was just, like, these objects always existed, like, they just kind of showed up. They appeared magically. But from working with Ryan, it's the creative process is way more like roll up your sleeves and like get to work every day. Even if you don't know, you don't have like an idea, it's like the note cards for him is like getting the reps to... You don't sit down because there's a flash of inspiration. You're just doing like the process every day.
Explain the note cards to people who might not be familiar.
So Ryan's research process, and I've adapted the note cards as well, but he reads a book and he like dog ears pages as he goes, and he sets it aside for like a week, goes back to it with a stack of note cards, and wherever he like made a note in the margin or underlined it, a passage or whatever, he goes back through and transfers those things onto a note card and then files them into a box by theme. So then when he like sits down to write an article, it's like, okay, here's 10 note cards that I've captured around this theme. And then you're basically just like, those are like the Lego pieces that you're building, you're putting together into a piece of writing. And that's just as like a constant process where he's working on a book now where he's using note cards from that he made 10 plus years ago. So it's, you don't know when you'll like see the fruit of that labor, but it's, they're like little notes to the future.
And each one compounds on itself because you have more knowledge and a higher base to go on today versus 10 years ago.
Yes. And it's similar to the copywriting process. So you're getting like the reps of, and I find, myself, like, there's this Mitch Hedberg joke about like how he keeps his pen on the other side of the room, because if he can't convince himself to get up to go get it, the joke's probably not good enough. So if I can't like convince myself to do the work to like transcribe something from the book onto a note card, it's like, okay, maybe it's not that good. But if I'm really excited about it, then, and now I just like, I have a collection of those things where sometimes I'll just like flip through and like, these are my favorite ideas. These are my favorite stories. So it's cool to like have that as on a day when you're just like not feeling it. Like you go through that and then you're like, okay, I'm going to write about this.
Yeah. And it also makes me realize like, what is that? It makes me ask like, what is that question? What is that feeling that you get when you highlight a great story?
Mm-hmm.
And why do you highlight certain things and not other?
Well, so this is another, I think, important point, because what you find when you go back through the book is you don't transfer all those highlights. And this is why I don't think, like people will email me, I've done a piece on my note card system, and people will email me like, you know, you can like set up Kindle to go directly into your Notion. And like, I purposely don't want that, because when you highlight stuff, usually there's like a novelty to it that you're drawn towards. But then when you go back through, you're like, what was I liking about this? So you might make 200 highlights in a book, and when I go back through, I might only make 4 or 5 note cards, because that's like, those are the things that held up as interesting. Time is a filter, is like Ryan's saying, is like you want to put it aside for a little bit. You don't want to like capture the thing on the first read. You want to give it a little time, be like, in a week, will I still like this? And those are the things you want to capture.
Yeah. And then what's your filter for writing itself? Like, let's say you write a newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
When do you write it? When do you edit it? When do you look at it again? Like, what's that process like?
The newsletter for me is, I send it out every Sunday, and I typically write it on Sunday, but by Thursday, typically I've decided what's going to be in it, and everything that's in the newsletter is coming from a note card. So all the material already exists. It's just a matter of like, which 6 am I going to put together this week? Like Jerry Seinfeld has this thing about like making charm bracelets. When he's putting a joke together, he's taking like this thing over here and this thing over here, and then he's like finding a way to associate them. And I do a similar thing with the newsletter, is like, these 4 or 5 things seem to have something in common, and then I'm stringing them together in the newsletter. So all the legwork has been done, and then I sit down on Sunday typically and like just sort of string those pieces together.
So it's like the first filter is you highlighting something.
Mm-hmm.
The second filter is you looking and transferring that highlight into a note. the third filter is like, these are the best of the notes, and then this becomes what gets sent out.
Right. And I'm also pretty slow to see how these things fit together. So I might capture something and put it in like this section, this theme, and then however long later, it could be a year later, where I find like another story where I'm like, oh, actually, that thing I put over here belongs over here. So it takes me time, because my newsletter is like usually by theme. There's like a theme to it. I'm slow to realize what those themes are. So it's that takes time. But then when I see like six or seven note cards stack up in one section, then that's kind of my cue to like go write about that.
That makes sense. And then why do you think your newsletter has such a high open rate?
I think one thing that helps is I do this, my like welcome email invites people to like email me with a book recommendation or just say hello, or, and I reply to all of them. And it's funny, like the amount of people that reply, like, I didn't think you were going to see it. So we're getting off on like a good note there. They're like, oh, there's a real person behind it. Because sometimes I read newsletters, I'm like, is this from a human being, you know? So I think there's that welcome email helps, of like, I'm trying to make it seem like they're getting something from a friend. And that's the best I can come up with why the open rate is high. And I would like to think that it's like good material. And I mean, it's all my favorite things that I try to put out stuff that like I myself would want to read. So I hope it's resonating with people, and it's like, they see it and it's like, there's trust there that it's going to be worth their time.
What's the coffee cup theory of AI?
So when I was doing the traveling, the skiing stuff, I was also working in coffee shops, and I was a barista. I have international barista experience. And the an interesting thing about coffee shops is like, wherever you go around the world, they all have the same machines, and they've scienced most of the process, like the way the beans are grown, the water composition, the mineral composition of the water. All these things are like, which is why you can get a good cup of coffee pretty much anywhere in the world. And that's kind of relatively a new phenomenon. Like it wasn't always the case. But still, there are plenty of people that like their French press, you know? There's plenty of people that like their store-bought beans on their countertop coffee pot. And I'm one of those people. Like, I don't need like a super fancy cup of coffee. So my theory with like the AI stuff is that it's sort of like that. Like, the world is really big. Everyone has different tastes. The machine that the barista uses depends on who they're serving. To me, the AI tools are just like another machine in like the artist's tool belt. And you might use it. Sometimes you might actually be better off being the person to make the whole piece. I think the hard part about creating stuff is like finding the overlap between what I like and what like might resonate with others. And whether the human is making the stuff or an AI bot is, that's still a challenge, because you don't know what's going to resonate with people. And I think if anyone, the human is probably in a better spot to like make that guess of what's going to work and what isn't. Because it's, you know, it's helpful to like be around humans and artists throughout history. Of like, part of the process has been like, Da Vinci would just like walk around with a notebook and listen to people in conversation and like take notes of their facial expressions and all these sorts of things, and that would inform his art. I think it's like, that's a good way to get a sense of what's going to work with people is just being around other human beings. So the computer not being around humans will make that tough for them to make something that resonates.
It's a great point. And also, what struck me immediately after reading it was like, okay, if we take your article, which is incredible, as true, which is linked below, go check it out. We then must understand that the most important part is what the human is deciding to include in their piece, aka taste.
Yes.
And taste becomes the most important thing. And so I message you and I'm like, yo, like, taste is everything then.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, I'm actually working on a piece on taste now.
Yeah.
So like, why, what about taste makes it so important? And also like, how can we get better taste?
Well, so taste is that like, that ability to recognize what is going to land with others. And everyone that's like put stuff out in the world has the experience of like, this is the best thing I've ever made. And then no one likes it, you know? Yeah. It's like, it falls flat for people. And then there's other times where you're like, I like this. I don't, probably won't do that great. And that thing goes like crazy. So and taste is like somewhere in there of like, how can you hone that ability to know what's going to work and what isn't? And that's, yeah, that's the challenge. But I think to develop it, for me, what's been helpful is writing for rejection. So for the last 4 or 5 years, everything I've written has had to go through Ryan's filter. So, and now my first drafts of, and when I send him something, like clearly I think it's good, I think it's ready, and he'll like, nope, you know, like cross out stuff and this needs to be better. It's not there yet. But now I'm like, I get there faster and my starting point is a little higher than it was 2 or 3 years ago. And if I didn't have that, if I just could send out what I thought was good every time, you know, just like on a blog or on Twitter or whatever, it'd be slower to develop or hone that sense. But having someone like Ryan, who's like, has great taste, having him give me feedback on stuff has helped me cultivate it. And back to the note card thing of, you do get a sense of when you're reading stuff and as you're making note cards, what that thing about like, well, I want to put the time in to transfer this onto a note card. Do I want to do that work? You get better at seeing like, yes, this is something I want to capture. And then just like consuming a lot of stuff. Like my day is filled with just reading and like listening to stuff, and doesn't even just have to be like in your domain. I think like listening to great music or like what documentaries are people liking? What's like the top 50 on Spotify right now? All those things, I think, somehow find their way back into your own like sensibilities.
If you consume greatness in any field, it finds its way back to you. You watch Michael Jordan play basketball or LeBron James, there's something, if you are creating your own thing, that is going to resonate and hit you at some level.
Yeah.
And that's so exciting because I've never thought to look at the top 50 Spotify charts for music, but now I'm going to go and do that.
Right. Well, it's like I heard John Mayer talk about this. He's like, people aren't wrong, you know, like they're...
What a lie.
If the top 50 is the top 50 for a reason, like that's what people are liking. So you want to like get in touch with like, what is that? And the music, it might not be for, not every song on that list is going to be for you, but it's like, if you want to make good stuff, it's helpful to try to do some work and like, okay, this number one song, like, is it, what can I learn from this? You know,
one thing that I noticed about you is just like everything that you share, I'm just like, that is so brilliant. Like I wish I shared that. I wish I stumbled across that and could share it.
Yeah.
So it's like, why do I have that feeling? It's not jealousy. It's like I'm so impressed with the things your filter. What's going on there?
Well, it means we have similar tastes.
Yeah.
And we're drawn to similar things. Like, I don't know. I don't know what exactly that is. It's good for me to hear that because, like I said, every time I'm putting stuff out, it's at best an educated guess as to like people are going to like this too. But that's like kind of the cool thing about taste and this discernment conversation is like you can't you can't, like, it's not a formula. We'll never actually know. So, like, the computers, what they're cranking out has to somehow contend with that as well.
How have you used ChatGPT to help your own writing, if at all, thus far? It's only been 2 months or 3 months that it's been out, but I'm curious.
I haven't used it extensively to this point. Ryan is, I think it's going out with Daily Stoic, but we prompted it to, like, write a Ryan Holiday style Daily Stoic email about how everyone is replaceable. And it were like 500 or 600 words that were like, I think we're going to use it. And then, like, at the bottom, be like, if that read a little weird, it's because, like, a robot wrote this. But that's, like, I haven't really used it aside from that. Like, Ryan was like, let's like experiment with it. Let's see. And it does, I could see me using it to, like, I have an idea for an article I want to write and just, like, prompt ChatGPT to write something about it and just see what it, like, inspires in me, see what it makes me think about, and use that as kind of like a launching pad. And I've heard, like, that's what a lot of writers are doing, but that's prior to these tools, that's, like, what I would use the box of note cards for. So now, like, still, I think I'll go to the note cards before I go to, like, the computer, but I think that's a use case I could imagine me using it for.
Yeah, and it also makes me think about how in that whole process, the person who has the most trust is going to be the person who wins. Because,
like, trust with the audience?
Yes. And it's why the connection to the human being who is consuming is the number one thing for brands to think about, or people to think about who want to create their own brands online. Because it's like, Ryan Holiday posts something that means more than Danny Miranda posting something or Billy Oppenheimer posting something on their first day of creating their blog. And why is that? You just build trust with an audience for a long time and given them good stuff. And therefore, people are like, okay, like, if this email comes in from Ryan, like, I inherently trust it.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing when you're building your brand online in any capacity is just, like, gaining trust with human beings. And so ChatGPT could spit out anything it wants, but does it have the trust of human beings? And in some sense it does, because 100 million people are using it. But in another sense, it's like, we still want to go to specific people for advice, for learnings, and for lessons.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. But it's like, I feel like whenever there's a new technology, like, the instinct is just to, like, use it in all these various different ways, and then slowly it, like, hones in on what it's actually for. Like with like telephones, you know, like, you used to, like, be able to call, like, hotlines and stuff, and, like, call radio stations, and I think you could, like, call and have someone, like, tell you a joke. Like, there's all, like, when, because of this new technology and everyone's really excited about it, like, let's try this. And then now it's just like, all I use my phone for is responding and to text or calling people. Maybe something like that will happen with these tools, is like, they're being used in all these different ways, and then it's going to become obvious, like, this is the best way to use it. It'll be interesting to see what that is.
Well, I'm curious to figure out what our answer to this is, you know, 3 years into it versus 3 months. Talk to me about creativity, because I find that this podcast goes to creativity so often, and maybe it's because when I'm creative, I'm most alive, when I'm playing with the world. But I'm curious, from your perspective, it's like, how do we tap into our own creativity more, and how do we help ourselves be more creative?
My favorite definition of creativity is, Robert Greene says that it's a function of the previous work you put in. So for Ryan, like, creativity is a function of the note card system and all that legwork. Like, he did a piece recently called All Success is a Lagging Indicator. And he opened with, like, I sat down to write the other day and I didn't have it. And he's like, you might think this is writer's block, but what the point of the piece was, like, when he said I didn't have it, it meant, like, I hadn't done the work yet to be able to write about this. So for him, it's like, if he's not feeling creative, that's a sign that he needs to do more work on the research side with the note cards. And I feel like the same way. I think everything, like Tinker Hatfield, the Nike shoe designer, talks about how, like, creativity is a function of the library in your head. And when you sit down to create, it's a culmination of everything you've experienced up to that point. Somehow everything is, like, finding its way into the work. So for me, like, to be creative, I have to do the work of, like, reading and making note cards and listening to stuff and watching documentaries. And then when I sit down to write, it's like those things are finding their way in somehow.
Do you have a specific practice for when you read, how you read? I know you read a book on reading from doing research. I found that out. I don't know who wrote it, but...
Probably Emerson's, yes. First I Read, Then I Write.
First I Read, Then I Write is the name of the book.
Yeah, it's a great book. And he's got great, like, thoughts on the reading process in terms of, like, how it helps you be more creative.
So, reading, what is your process for it, and how do you go about reading effectively so that the inputs that you bring in are creating great output?
I read first thing every day. I try to block out, like, an hour every morning. And then I try to look for just, like, pockets throughout the day where I can sneak in some reading. But as far as, like, the actual reading process, I like physical books. I like to have, like, a pen in hand. And I'm just kind of, like, on a hunt for good stories and quotes and that feeling of this is exciting. The psychologist Scott Barry Kaufman, I was listening to him recently, and he was saying that, like, they somewhat recently discovered, like, the nerdy dopamine pathway, he called it. So, like, there's when you, like, read something that gets you excited and you get that, like, dopamine hit, I'm looking for, like, that feeling when I'm reading, and I try to, like, make note of it. And then I put the book aside when you're done, because a lot of those, that initial feeling of excitement on the second read, the, like, novelty wears off. But that's really it. It's just read with a pen, making notes in the margin, anything that comes to mind. Oh, another thing I do is, like, I'll write in the margin a question, corresponding to what the story or the passage is talking about, because I find, like, when I go back through it, for some reason the question sparks, like, what's going on at that point in the book in a way that just, like, a line about whatever doesn't, but for some reason, so I'm trying to think of an example. I'm reading this Dr. Seuss biography right now, and there's a story about how he was working as a freelance, like, ad illustrator. And he drew a cartoon, and he was trying to decide. He was using an insect spray in the cartoon. He was trying to decide which brand to use, and he flipped a coin to decide. And he went with the Flit. I don't think it exists anymore, but it was, like, the leading insect spray brand at the time. So I'll write in the margin, like, how did Dr. Seuss decide to use Flit in the cartoon? And when I go back through, that will spark that little anecdote for me. So that's, like, kind of I've never, like, seen anyone else talk about that, but that I find that really helpful. I don't even know why I started doing it, but that's, like, a little tactic that might be helpful for others.
Well, when you ask a question, you inherently fill in the answer.
Right.
Your mind goes there. And so when you ask that question now, you have a great story to go to,
mm-hmm.
and a great way for you to make decisions now in the future, potentially. So just flip a coin.
Yeah. No, and so the cool thing about that story is he went with Flit, and that cartoon ran in a magazine called Judge, and a woman picked it up at a beauty salon and saw it, and it happened to be that her husband was an ad executive for Flit, and they hired him, and Dr. Seuss wrote ads for Flit for like 17 years from that. Oh. From and he said like that coin toss changed my life.
I just got chills.
Yeah, it's a wild story. But for like and he didn't write his first children's book until he was like 34 or 35. Like for a long time he was like an ad guy.
Go figure.
Yeah.
I'm reading Kevin Hart's autobiography right now.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Highly recommend it. Linked below. The amount of times in which a random situation happens like that changes his life,
yeah,
is like remarkable. And it's his ability to say yes, his ability to lean into the synchronicities and the connections, and someone meeting him at the airport, and that turns into him starring in the biggest movie that he's been in.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh my God, this is insane. And so for you, what do you think have been some of the moments that you can share of like the random coincidences that have led to remarkable outcomes?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, I think that's this. I've been kicking around this idea of like, there's a concept of inbound marketing from the HubSpot guys, where rather than outbound, where you're like cold calling, cold emailing people, put out like good content to find potential customers. And I think like that's a good strategy on like for individuals. So putting out just whether it's writing or YouTube or podcasts or just sharing like stuff you're interested in. And that becomes kind of a magnet for people also interested in that. So opportunities come through that as well. And the analogy I stumbled on was in the animal kingdom. There's something called courtship display. And many wild animals have different like behaviors to attract mates. And essentially all of them are like, the female is essentially asking like, show me what you can do, you know? So like my favorite example is that bower birds build what's called bowers, and they're like nests. And the like geometry of the bower indicates their level of intelligence. The color surrounding it indicates like their taste for like what do they think is, because the female is attracted to bright colors, and then like the variety of materials indicates their foraging abilities, and the female like wants to get a sense of like, are we in good hands, like will the offspring be taken care of. And I like read about that, like, oh, that's kind of like this inbound marketing idea of like, show us what you can do, and like you attract things that way. So like Kevin Hart is like putting out really good stuff out into the world. Other people are finding that, and there's this magnetism to it. Like that's how we got connected. So I think there's something to that of not waiting for permission to do it, to start doing it, and then you start to like stumble into cool opportunities that way.
If you want to be a writer, just write today and write every day after this. If you want to be a podcaster, just record and put out podcasts.
Yeah.
Sounds simple, but it's like...
Well, so this was also, I didn't know it at the time, but it was actually one of the things Ryan liked, was that I was writing that blog, like I said, into the void for like a year and a half. And for him, it was like a good sign, because almost better than if I was being like published in the New York Times or something, is that I was writing for no one. And I just like, for some reason, was doing it. So there's... And now when we're like looking for people, like that's one of the things we're looking for, is just like, is this person doing the thing already?
Oprah said, if you are doing something that you would do for free, you're on the path to success.
Mm.
It's remarkable because it's so simple and it's so true. And it's just like, oh, like if you would be willing to interview people for free, like maybe you should be a podcaster. If you'd be willing to write into the void for a year and a half, like... maybe you should be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And just play around with different things, right? Like someone listening, they're like, I don't know if I want to be a podcaster or a writer or whatever. It's like, play around. Like, just do different experiments.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I still sort of evaluate opportunities that way. It was like, if I'm like saying to myself, but the money will be nice, that's like kind of a cue to like not do it.
Which is fascinating, because society told us the opposite.
Yeah, but ideally it's like money hasn't been talked about yet, and I'm good if I don't get paid for this because it's like really cool to work on this. And then usually like those things turn out to be like fruitful, but also you just like, you already won because like I got to like work on this thing.
So what are examples of the synchronicities or the random coincidences that have happened since you've started working with Ryan, or just like in general?
The coolest one was, what month is it? It's February, in like October of last year. I wrote this thread on, I went deep into like Rick Rubin. I read it like a biography, and like, I think it was before his book had come out. So he hadn't yet done like the podcast tour, but there was a few out there. So I read that book and then like listened to him on a bunch of podcasts that he had been on up to that point. Watched like the Shangri-La documentary. He did a documentary with Paul McCartney, just like anything I could find. And then I did like 10 things basically about like to do your best creative work from the legendary producer, Rick Rubin. And I did this thread, and then
linked below.
Yeah. And then I got an email, and the subject line was like Rick Rubin something. And I've done those similar threads before, and I'll get emails from people with like a similar subject line. I'm just like, I read it, I liked it. So I was like, next time I'm at my computer, I'll like reply to this email. And I got to my computer, I opened it, and it was like, hey, this is Rick Rubin's assistant. We saw the thread. He's got a few things like he's wanting to get in the works. Like, would you want to have a conversation? And I was like, yeah, of course. So I had a phone call with her, and we just sort of chat. It was just kind of like I think she was just like trying to get a feel for like me and like, do I have bandwidth to take stuff on? And, we just had a really good conversation. She helped on that, Paul McCartney thing. So I was asking her about that. And then a couple of days later she texts me and she's like, hey, Rick just had some time open up. Could you jump on a Zoom call? I was like, yep. And so I had a call with him, just kind of tell me what he wants to do. I don't know if I can speak to it, but I'm maybe like helping him with some stuff. But that it wouldn't have happened without that, you know, putting the work out. And I couldn't have sent him my resume, you know, and be like, hey, I would love to. But you just put stuff out and like weird things start to happen.
So damn cool. And I'm so happy you shared that, because you shared that with me when we first had lunch together, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just the power of the internet. It's the power of doing work long enough. It's the power of being smart about how you're distributing your content as well. You could have posted the same thing on your blog,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even in a newsletter, and it might never have gotten to Rick Rubin's assistant or Rick Rubin himself. So what are the lessons you take away from that?
I mean, it's kind of back to like that Dr. Seuss story. After he like tells that, he's like, I'm a big believer in accidents. And I'm like, I'm also a big believer in accidents, because like, I couldn't have foreseen that. The timing was right, because I asked him, I was like, how did this get on your radar? And he was like, well, the book's coming out in a couple months. I've kind of been like keeping an eye out to see if people are talking about it. And I didn't even, I almost didn't put it out, because I was like, I know the book's coming out. Maybe I'll put it around the time of the book. And I was like, I don't know. I really like it. Like, I'm just going to, I couldn't hold on to it. So I put it out. So for me, the lesson is just like, and when I'm asked about like goals setting or whatever, I'm like, if I would have set any goals, and like the things that happen are typically for me have happened to be beyond what I could have conceived. So I heard Paul Millard, who you've had on, he said something that resonated with me. He's like, I've tried on goals. They don't work for me. And I felt the same way. I was like, I've tried them on. I just, for some reason, I'm just not a goal guy. But yeah, that was like the accident stuff is, Morgan Housel has a great article on this called Fluke, where he got his start on like this fluke situation of responding to some typo that a guy wrote, and the guy responded and was like, thanks for calling that out, take care of it. And then he got to like know that guy, and it led to his first writing job. But yeah, I'm a big believer in flukes and accidents.
When you experience that enough times, you have such a trust with whatever happens being the right thing happening in that moment. And I was talking to these kids last night, and they're just like, what do you want to happen? What's going on? Like, who's the dream guest? And I'm like,
yeah,
yo, like, whatever is happening in this moment is exactly what should happen.
Right.
And I trust it. And it's, I don't know how to explain it, but they're asking me like, what's your CRM? How do you follow up with people? How do you do all these? I'm like, dude, I haven't thought about any of this stuff. And it's probably good that you're asking me questions about it so that I can understand my own process better. But the truth is, I don't think about a lot of stuff. I just let it flow.
Yeah. I also find like those people never ask like, how do you get good at podcasting? Or it's never like, what should I do to get better at writing? It's like, what are your best tactics for growing on Twitter? And it's like, it's never, it's never about like the thing that actually works, which is just like get better at the thing. And that's like, that's what I like about you is like, you're just solely focused on like becoming a great podcaster. And I think like the other stuff takes care of itself, you know, it's like the score takes care of itself kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know.
Everything else falls in place when you focus on the main thing.
Yeah. And just like the work. Because also it's like, suppose you do get that number of followers, then what? You just stop? Or no, you ideally you like keep doing it. So focus on like the thing, getting better at it. And then I think let that like work itself out.
The work is the win. I heard you say when I was listening to you on previous podcasts, the work is the win.
Yes. That is, Ryan talks about that. And also Hasan Minhaj, the comedian, has a great thing on this where it was before he gotten like really big. He was asked, like, do you think you're going to become a big-time comedian? And he was like, I fundamentally don't like that question. Because that question means this is all predicated on me making it. And I've never been about that. I'm about the work. Like, me getting to go on stage tonight at this, like, crappy bar, I've won.
This is the win.
Yeah.
This conversation is the win.
Yeah.
You writing your articles are the win.
Right.
More people got to hear that.
Yeah. And that's like the people Ryan is so about the work is the win. Robert Greene is the work is the win. A lot of the people I look up to, and have had like all the things that people like focus on have just been accidental byproducts of doing it.
You've had two Robert Greene posts on Twitter that stuck out to me and that I highlighted so that when I interview him, later this year, which is just a wild...
Are you interviewing him? Yeah. Nice. Heck yeah, he's the best.
So I pulled out these quotes from you so that I could talk to him about them, but I'm going to talk to you about them too because they were impactful. So this is on boredom.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Greene, this is your quote. Robert Greene once told me that there's a dividing line between success and failure, the ability to sit with boredom. Great creative work, he said, is the product of a very tedious process, hours and hours of thinking, researching, and daydreaming.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
So he came to Texas a year ago, a little over a year ago, and I picked him up from the airport. I was taking him to Bastrop, and we were going to get dinner with Ryan, and I was so nervous because I'm just such a huge fan of Robert's, and the idea of me being in a car with him for 40 minutes was just, I was sweating. And then immediately it just like went away. He just like puts you at ease. He's so gentle and the conversation flowed from the time you got in the car to the time we got to Bastrop. And I was asking him about, because I've read about and I've heard him talk about how he hasn't been able to find a good research assistant since Ryan. And I was asking him like, and he's had like 20. He's tried like 20. And I was like, why didn't it work out with any of them? Like, what don't they have? And he thought about it for a second, and that's when he said the dividing line between success and failure is the ability to sit with boredom. And he's like, the life of a writer is pretty boring. And then all of these people just haven't been able to sit with that boredom, because the work to like go through a book and find material that Robert might be able to use is a boring process. But that's the thing Ryan loves. It's the thing Robert loves to do. Tomorrow, or after this, I'll go back to my office and pull out stuff from books and put them onto note cards. Like that, it's exciting for some people. But yeah, the boredom thing that really stuck with me. And I think he's right. Like it is rare for people to be able to be comfortable with that.
It's funny because people might look at the podcast and be like, that's super cool that you get to talk to these people. But the boring part, quote unquote boring part,
mm-hmm.
is the 20 hours before.
Right.
Where I'm looking into you, looking into your story. It's not boring to me, but I could understand some people getting bored with that.
For sure.
And then afterwards, all right, now I'm going to edit it. Now I'm going to distribute it. Now, and it's like, that's the thing that people might not understand when they think they want to start a podcast, is they think they like one part of it. And maybe that one part can turn into multiple parts. You have to do the process to figure that out, but it's worth considering.
Yeah. It's also, it's maybe a way to get a sense of like what it is you should do. It's like, get to the boring parts of the thing and like, do you like those things?
Yes.
Because for you, most of the work is not recording. For me, most of the work is not publishing a piece. It's everything around that. And I like those things. So I take that as like, I think I'm on the right path. And getting to the boring parts of the thing, you should go straight to it and be like, do I like this? And if yes, follow it.
100%. It's like when you played lacrosse, it was probably just like putting the ball against the wall over and over and over and over again.
Right.
It's like if you could do that, well, then you could play well in the game.
For sure.
What have you taken from lacrosse into your creative work?
Well, I think it was helpful in that it's similar to this point, like the lacrosse season or any season, whatever sport you play, is 3 months, maybe you play 16 games. So all of the work is not that. It's summer break. It's winter break. It's going to the gym on Christmas Eve to get a workout in, because like when you get back to campus, you have to like perform. And it's similar with writing, with like the seasonality of books. And even Ryan, who puts like one out a year, which is an absurd cadence, but even when that's the case, there's a short window in which we're like launching and promoting a book, and the rest of the year is like the stuff no one sees. So I've been able to like see that of like, oh, this is like the off season, but the work really matters still. And being able to like it's fun to play a game in front of a crowd, but that only happens 16 times a year. So if that's all you like it's not going to be for you. So like delaying gratification is big, is because most of it isn't, no one's seeing what's happening.
I love that. Second Robert Greene quote that I wanted to hit with you.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Greene once told me, above all else, focus on acquiring knowledge and skills. Knowledge and skills are like gold, a currency. You will transform into something more valuable than you can imagine. With knowledge and skills, Robert said, you become a magnet for opportunities.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, it's similar to what we were talking about with attracting opportunities. Like, if you think about the people that are in a position to put like crazy opportunities in front of you, what are they looking for? Is like something that you can do to help them in some way. And like, what that means is like you have some skill or knowledge that is valuable to them. So, and Steve Martin, the comedian, he says like to focus on being so good they can't ignore you. And I think what Robert's saying is something, and Cal Newport has a book with that title, So Good They Can't Ignore You. And I think it's like a similar idea of just acquiring something that is like perceived or objectively valuable to others. And like David Senra from Founders Podcast, he was on Patrick O'Shaughnessy's podcast and he was saying like, there's no secret here. Like you do something for 4 or 5 hours a day, day after day after day, and you develop like something that is of value to others. And then that is like, that's where opportunities come. That's where like money, so that's what Robert was saying, is like, don't focus on opportunities where like the money is the best. Focus on like the opportunities where you're going to add like another tool to the tool belt, or you will grow as a writer because of it. And I've like taken that as like, that's like my like guiding thing. Like since he said that, I was like, that's all I'm going to focus on is acquiring knowledge and skills.
So like, what have you actually done to make that a reality? What change did you make after hearing that advice?
I don't know if it was a change so much as it was also just like a reassurance, because I'm kind of like, it's kind of like an odd path that we're on, you know, or not odd, but just not like the default path, as Paul Millard says, but, so it was reassuring to hear from him not to go after money, because for a couple of years there, I was like, should I be going to like get a job, like a job? So it was for Robert to say that, for it to come from him was like, I'm on the right path. Like keep doing these things, like the note cards, the reading, putting the work in, and that other stuff will work out.
So it's obvious to me and probably the people who see you on Twitter that you're on the right path. It's obvious to those people. But I'm curious about your parents, your family, the people who knew you at Lehigh.
Mm.
Do they think or know you're on the right path? And if so, how has that gone, that whole transition and other people's perspectives of what you're doing?
My parents have always been supportive, and they've encouraged what I've, even when I was like doing the skiing thing, like my dad thought that was good to be getting out and like experiencing stuff and living in Australia for a year and like broadening my like perspective on things. There was a point in the skiing thing where like my dad and I had a conversation where he was like, how long are you thinking about doing this? And I could sense like he was getting a little worried about it. And at that point, I wanted to keep doing that. But they've been super supportive all the whole way. My friends, like the story of me reaching out to Ryan and like going out to like meet him for the first time, like they'll say things like, that is only something you would do. And like, to me, it didn't feel like that crazy, you know? So I've somehow like carved out in their, like from their point of view, like I'm kind of the odd, like that didn't seem too out there what I've been doing. So yeah, the people like closest to me, like it makes sense, I think, what I'm doing. They've got it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I was telling Paul about that similar experience from my end as well. But what advice would you have for somebody who hasn't had that experience? Because from talking to Paul, I got the feeling that our experiences are not the norm for people going on a different path.
Yeah.
What actually is the norm is like people being like, what is wrong with you? How are you doing this? What's compelling you to chase this dream or vision or whatever? And a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm. Like, what advice would you have for people who aren't, and their families or their circle isn't comfortable with it?
To quote Hasan Minhaj again, he talks about like, you have to be okay being the freak for a little bit. Like, you got to be able to go to like the wedding or the family party and like no one really getting it, and just kind of surrender to it. Like, they're not going to get it. And like, whatever they say, it doesn't really matter. Like, I get it. But yeah, I think about that a lot. Like, just being okay with being the freak, and like, who really cares, you know?
If Kevin Hart, the great Kevin Hart, is starting comedy for the first time, and half the people are like, dude, you're not funny. What's wrong with you? And the other half are like, yo, keep going. This is great. Like, if half the people in his life don't understand, what makes you think that if you're starting writing or you're starting music or you're starting podcasting, that people in your own life are going to be like, 100% of them are going to be like, yo, like, you got this.
Yeah.
Just probably not going to happen. And that's okay if you can be comfortable with being the freak and being like, this is me, this is what I'm doing. And
yeah,
you don't get it, you don't get it.
Yeah. And like, playing the long game, I think, is important. Like,
us,
it's not going to happen fast. It never, like, it doesn't happen. And if you start with that, I think it puts you in a really good spot of like, it might take 10 years before I like, and it brings me to like another thing I sometimes think about is like, what's something you want to get really good at? Like, and then like, make that the thing and know that it's going to take a long time. But I feel like the pursuit of getting really good at something is so satisfying, and like, and if you can like have that perspective from the beginning that like, I'm in this for, it's, I know it's going to take a long time. And I think that's like a good thing to pursue.
Definitely. And a good question to ask yourself is like, who do I admire? Right? Like,
oh yeah,
that could help point the finger to what you should be pursuing in the creative or uncreative realm. Like,
oh yeah, no, I'm big on that. There's this concept in psychology called introjection. Actually, I heard about it from Andrew Huberman, who was, I forget which, it wasn't on his podcast, he was on a podcast, and he was saying that in, when he was in like graduate school, he was working mostly in isolation, like in his lab, and he made a list of his favorite like scientists, and he kept it in his lab, and he would constantly look at it and like think about what he liked about each of them. And slowly, like, this process of introjection is the process of like you inheriting some of those qualities. And yeah, I think it's like a pretty good strategy is like, find your favorite, for me, writers or just thinkers or creators, go deep on their work, and you can't help but some of that rub off on you, in a good way. I don't like the advice to like just be yourself, because I don't like know what I would do if I was just, I think better to like, what am I liking? And it's not like you're idolizing everything about a person, but it's like, I like this, I like this, I like this from each of these different people, and slowly like letting that wear off on you. And also there's like something to why am I drawn to this person's work? Like, there's something that you're drawn to for a reason. So, like, it's maybe somewhere in you is you're like resonating with that. Like Emerson had this line about, we revere man of genius because, to speak the truth, they are more you than you. Like, when you're drawn to something in a piece of writing or music, he's saying that, like, they've articulated something you felt, but that they put words to it, they know you better than you do. And so when you, like, are drawn to someone's work, it's like there's something to that. There's a connection there that it helps to, like, reflect on, like, what is that?
Another piece of this is that from creating, I find more of myself because I'm forced to sit with the blank page of a conversation and be like, what am I asking? Why am I asking this thing or that thing?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's similar to you with writing. It's like, why am I choosing to write about this thing or that thing? Well, that part of me, that what I'm writing now was in me and I just pulled it out and now I know myself better as a result of writing.
Right. We were talking about this before we pushed record. On the Shangri-La documentary, Rick Rubin says something like, I'm often surprised by what comes out of my mouth. And I was like, I feel the same way. Like, sometimes I say things and I'm like, oh, I didn't, like, know that was in there. But, like, or I'll be like, I'll be in conversation and I'll catch myself, like, I'm basically reading, like, what I wrote on a note card. I'm, like, quoting, you know? So it's like, yeah, the process of creating, speaking, like we were saying, that there's that line about how, like, you never learn anything from talking. And I kind of, like, I'm always learning stuff by, like, what comes out of my mouth. But yeah, there's definitely a discovery that happens when you sit down to, like, because I always sit down with just kind of a vague sense of, like, I want to write about this topic, and then I'm usually surprised by where it goes.
What about the writing process do you enjoy the most?
I love, and it's what I love to read as well, is, like, when things that seemingly don't go together are connected. Morgan Housel does this really well, where he tells a story of, like, the Ice Age and then connects it to compound interest. Ryan does it really well, tell a story of, you know, whoever, and then draw it to, like, a philosophical concept. And I love that. Like, Malcolm Gladwell does it. And that's my favorite. Again, back to that, like, the nerdy pathway, the dopamine hit of, like, when I read a story over here and it's like, oh, this is, like, that concept from psychology. And, like, bringing those together is really exciting for me. And that's basically when I sit down and I pull out a stack of note cards, is, like, that's what I'm trying to do. That's, like, my favorite thing.
The connection. And you know what's fascinating is, like, the more perspectives you have, the more connection you can draw.
Mm.
And this is why we're so drawn to writers or podcasters, because they've experienced so much of the world through their reading and through their conversations that they have more perspective. And if you have more perspective, you can draw more connections. And if you can draw more connections, that's just knowledge or wisdom.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like the Robert Greene thing of acquiring knowledge, is, like, you're just stacking up, like, interesting perspectives that, like, people might, if you're, like, putting out a lot of stuff on the history of entrepreneurship, a founder might reach out and be like, hey, we're trying to make the decision. From all of your reading, have you come across anything that we should think about? Like, that might happen. And they're just, like, trying to tap into, like, your knowledge. So, yeah, it's just, like, I don't think you can, like, acquire too much information. You can get, like, there's the risk of, like, just constantly consuming and not putting stuff out. So for me, starting the newsletter and, like, calling it 6 at 6 on Sunday, so I'm locked into it goes out on Sunday at 6, it was important because I can get in that trap of just, like, because I love just consuming, but now I'm forcing myself to sit down to, like, create something.
Yeah, it's really important. For me, it's like the consumption naturally leads to creation of some sort. But if you don't have that, I think it's important that you create some sort of forcing function for yourself. Like, all right, I'm going to take these things that I'm reading or learning or listening to and actually create something from it. And I also think that that's the greatest sign that something you've consumed has impacted you at a deep level is if you use that thing to create something yourself. For example, when people take clips of this podcast and on their own just create new clips from the things that they've listened to, that to me is a sign that it's hitting someone at a deep level.
Yeah.
Deeper than just consuming it.
Yeah. I mean, I think like almost everything is a remix of something. So
that was the book that I was going to get you, which is Austin Kleon's Show Your Work.
Oh, I love, yeah. I mean, I love all of Austin Kleon's work. You should get him on the podcast.
I would love that. Yeah, you have a connection for me?
I don't know him personally, but I know Ryan knows him well. Yeah. But Show Your Work is amazing. Steal Like an Artist is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Austin has a quote in one of those books about like, if you think something is original, you just don't know their sources. You know, like David Senra again is like he talks so much about like everything, every idea you think comes from Steve Jobs actually comes from Edwin Land, and every idea that came from Edwin Land came from Alexander Graham Bell. And you just like follow the thread, because everyone's kind of doing a similar thing of like they're taking in stuff, they're inspired by it, and then they're smashing it together in like a way that makes sense to them.
Absolutely. What is Falcon Oath?
Wow. Where did interesting. Okay. Falcon Oath is, so in Australia, they say, can I curse on here? They say fucking oath. So if you're like, do you want to go out tonight? They go fucking oath, mate, which means like, yeah, so down. And when I moved there, I thought they were saying Falcon Oath because of the accent. So the first time that I like tried to say it as like, all right, I've been here, like I'm going to say it. They're like, whatever they said, I was like, Falcon Oath, let's do it. And they're like, did you just say Falcon? I was like, yeah, isn't that what you guys say? And then they like taught me what it was. But that became like kind of a thing with like my friend group there was Falcon Oath. And then I moved, I was living on the west coast of Australia. I moved to the other side, to the east coast, met a mutual friend, and we rented a van and traveled the east coast. And we called the van the Falcon. So it just became like, and that whole van trip was like, we had no plan, wake up, what should we do? Do a little like, pull up maps, see like what was nearby. Should we do this? Falcon Oath, let's do it. So it just became kind of like this like ethos of like, let's go see what it is. And I kind of back to that thing of like accidents and being open to trying stuff and not really having like a firm sense of where, but being like, okay with that. And I've long thought, and I think I'm going to do it, like of getting a falcon on, like a falcon tattoo, because, the reason I went to Australia is I was a huge Heath Ledger fan and he has a falcon on his arm. So like all these, I kept like seeing falcons. So that's like kind of just like a mantra for me.
Just like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Come down.
Yeah.
There's a huge part of you that's like an explorer. It's like curious about the ways in which the world works and wanting to see all of it. Where does that come from?
I think maybe like it's kind of like that quote about how as your island of knowledge grows, the shore of your ignorance does too. Like as you like learn more, you learn that there's way more to learn, and you just sort of like, you get on that kind of like hunt. And I think it's the same thing of like when you go to a different country for the first time, you're like, wow, this is what it's like. And then you're like, well, what is it like over in that country? And then you just, now you're on that. So I think that's what it is. It's like, I don't think it was always like that. But you have like, I had that one experience in Australia and I was just like, let me go see what else is out there.
And then, what would you suggest to people who want to stoke that war themselves?
Either go live in like a new place. I think abroad it would be the way to do it. Is like, and don't just go travel, just go like drop and like move there and just like become part of the culture. Cause it's, I think it's a different experience when you're like, embedded into the thing? Like, you live there and like you work at a cafe and your friends are from the country versus like visiting and seeing the sights and that kind of thing. That was like probably the most formative experience for me, was moving to Australia in this regard. And then the other way would be like just books. If like you're not already obsessed with reading, like find a way to, because I think it's like, if you're not, you just haven't found the right book. And working to find it and then getting that, like getting hooked into it, is, I think, is worth it.
1000%. I like to end these podcasts with a challenge. A challenge points to the place in your heart you think people should take everything we spoke about and actually do something with what we've spoke about or something we haven't spoke about into their day-to-day lives. Does a challenge come to mind?
Two sort of come to mind. The first would be to like that introjection thing of finding like the people you look up to and going deep into their work and letting that wear off on you a little bit, and maybe make a list like Andrew Huberman did. And so that might be one. But also I think like the thing about just doing the work of like, whether if it's writing, start a blog, like what's one small step you can take to like just start doing the thing that you'd like to do? You don't need like to be published in some fancy publication, but just like start getting the reps in, because that like magnetism I think is real. Like people like Ryan, myself, like we're like reading, we're keeping an eye out for people doing interesting stuff. So like, how can you like put yourself in a position to be like seen by the people you want to be seen by? I don't know.
Like Rick Rubin.
Yeah. Yeah. Just start putting work out and just see where it goes.
Dude, this has been so much fun. The first of many, I'm sure.
Yeah. I want to be the guest at Madison Square Garden. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, there's so many.
I think it would be empty if I was the guest.
No, definitely not. I think that's going to help us sell some more tickets.
Yeah.
But, Billy, it's been such a pleasure. So grateful for you. 6 at 6 newsletter. Everyone check out.
Yeah.
Twitter.
Yep.
Where are you at on Twitter?
I'm on there.
I know. What's the handle?
B.P. Oppenheimer.
B.P. Oppenheimer.
P as in Paul, my middle name, my father's name.
Nice.
Shout out to my dad.
Shout out to Oppenheimer. Linked below.
Paul is linked below.
We got so many resources for people to check out from this episode. I feel like I've said linked below about 17 yeah. times now. And that's because you're a treasure trove of wisdom and amazing sources. And it shines through in this conversation.
Well, it's like, it's not me. It's like, I was quoting a lot. I'm so inspired by people like doing cool stuff. And I just try to like capture it and try to spread their... Like, the newsletter is basically just, like, sharing my favorite stuff. And kind of like this conversation has been.
Yeah, and it's amazing. And I always come away with that after reading your newsletter, being like, oh, shit. Like, I didn't know that. Or I didn't know that.
Oh, that's cool.
This is cool. This is so amazing newsletter. Highly recommended. And all of your links are down below. Thank you so much for spending the time here. I'm so grateful to have spent it with you.
Me as well, man. This was a blast. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Can't wait.